Next thing I know, it stops. I threw the tools down. He's like, holy crap. So we take off running. Bender's on the ridge below chiseling away at something. So I jump to him and I'm like, I just got nailed by a light. And he's like, no way. Bam. So I'm charged up. It hits me again. This one takes me to the ground. And I'm just getting fried.
Welcome to Trail Effect. I am your host, Josh Blum. Trail Effect is a show that dives into the stories behind trails, the communities that embrace trails, and the people who rely on trails as a way of life. The goal of this show is to turn the stories you will hear from our guests into useful knowledge that can be applied to your community while providing some entertaining and inspirational content. Guests on Trail Effect include trail builders, board members, community leaders, volunteers, and regular people who really enjoy trails. For episode 164, we have the infamous Randy Spangler. For most, Randy needs no introduction. Randy has been to every Red Bull Rampage event as a competitor, builder, or judge. Randy has also been fortunate enough to travel around the world as a mountain biker and trail builder. Randy has a couple pretty epic stories in this one, so sit back and enjoy the show. Cooley Creative is the title sponsor for this episode. They design and build custom websites, as well as help companies with branding, photography, and e-commerce. Cooley Creative was started in Wisconsin, but is now based out of Bend, Oregon. Jared from Cooley Creative is a friend of mine. We've traveled together on multiple mountain bike trips, and sometimes he sends it. For more information about Cooley Creative, head on over to www.dudejustsendit.com. Yes, that's right, www.dudejustsendit will get you to the Cooley Creative website, so check it out. Kettle Mountain Apparel. As we are getting closer to spring here in the Northern Hemisphere, it is time to start thinking about buying some new riding gear for the season. Some of my personal favorites at Kettle Mountain Apparel are the Canyon Bibs paired with the Skidmark shorts and the Wayward short sleeve jersey. These are all super comfortable and functional articles of clothing that you can wear without looking like a superhero on your bike. Kettle Mountain Apparel also offers a lifetime guarantee on all of their products. By using the affiliate links found in the show notes or on the Trail Effect website, a small commission will come back to Trail Effect Podcast, which helps cover the expenses of keeping this show going. Now on to the Trail Effect with Randy Spangler. Here we are today on Trail Effect. I have the infamous Randy Spangler. I think Randy's been to about every Red Bull Rampage ever and a whole bunch of other stuff as well. He's traveled around the world a whole bunch of times. Are you still working for IMBA or are you not working for IMBA? Because I know you worked for IMBA for quite a while.
I did work for IMBA quite a while, but I haven't been with them now for almost five. I think it's been about 5 years.
So there he's formerly of IMBA. And then he's also a reality TV star.
Where I am?
I think there's a show called Drop In.
Oh, yeah. Man, you know, it's funny how this time just cruises by and, you know, you kind of face out some of that stuff. Yeah, that's true. That was there. That was a good moment in life.
That was back when reality TV was a little bit more real.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that one especially too. The first round for me was the New Zealand trip. It was pretty awesome. And then I was able to get in the next series when they came back and they did a U.S. one as well. So, oh, yeah. Yes. Venture around there.
We're going to get into that, but I want to talk about Cam Zink winning Rampage in 2023. What I don't want to talk about is any kind of judging criticisms, because I personally don't care less, and I know you guys all do the best job that you can do, so I'm not going to ask you anything about that. But how about Cam Zink winning after dropping a retirement video?
Awesome. I mean, what a way to just follow that up, right? You know, you put that out as kind of a joke, I'm sure, for him, but at the same time, like, hey, I'm still relevant, man. I still want to do this. You know, I got the passion for this. You know, I still know how to ride. So for him to put that out and put himself on the podium was like, that was still awesome.
Yeah. And man, he sent it too. That's such a, in my opinion, I'm not a judge, but it was a super clean run. And I think that's, you know, to me, what spoke up more than anything.
Well, for sure. I mean, the run is a top to bottom. And then the big one, you know, that middle big center, which I don't think some people realize the aspect of that particular feature. The relevance for what it put out there. You know, that was back in the day, that was built with an Oakley Icon sender, which had a roll-in feature, and then they would drop off of that. You know, so the fact that somebody was going to come off the top with no Icon sender feature there and tee that up from top to bottom was just a little mind-boggling. Like, okay, you really think you're going to bite that one off? All right, you know? So to see him and Kyle both stomp that thing was just pretty mind-boggling. And then just to throw the flip, that was just massive, you know?
Well, and speaking of Kyle, the fact that he's still there and stopped his full run too.
Well, what a mental comeback for him, you know. That's a big thing, especially in that event. And then to come back within a year, get yourself back in there and build the confidence to run that same line and go for the same thing was such a huge, huge feat. And then, you know, I got honored with the Tough Guy Award. Pretty cool.
Yeah. Do you pay any attention to the Red Bull Hardline stuff?
Yeah, I keep up on that.
So that's happening currently at Medina Bike Park in Tasmania. What are your thoughts on that event? Because it's a mix of what, it's like basically a racing rampage.
You know, what's funny is, you nailed it right there. Because if you look at the course this year, the new course compared to what they've had, it does have that type of feel. You know, some of the sands are like the long, big gap, step down. Like I said, it's a race course of almost a rampage. But then you've got some flow to it, which I think, of course, awesome. I can't wait to see how everything unfolds. You know, the practice session so far, men and women above have just been crushing it.
Yeah, I've been watching a little bit on YouTube of what, why can't I think of his name right now? This is where I edit stuff out. Why can't I think of his name? That Moi Moi TV, YT Rider. Why can't, like, enduro guy, former downhill racer. We're playing trivia now.
Yeah, now we are. Now you got me twisting my head.
Jack Moyer.
Oh, okay.
So anyhow, Jack's been sending, and Moyer's got some really awesome content, especially like behind the scenes with just how big people are sending it and how they're kind of like, how they've been dissecting the course section by section. So it's pretty cool to watch that stuff.
Which I think it's, you know, it seems like for that course without being there, I think that seems like the best way. I'm sure there's groups that are running those sections just to keep that general motivation and the hype up together, the group and, you know, cheering everyone on and just working their way down. So I think, you're starting to, I think probably a little bit started yesterday. And I think today, you know, they'll obviously be doing top to bottoms because go time tomorrow.
Yeah. Yep. And they're a half a day ahead of us. So
true.
So, which is pretty awesome. Well, let's get into your backstory and why and how you got into mountain biking.
Backstory for me is I'm actually a BMX kid. So I grew up BMX and grew up out of Texas. Got into it pretty young when I was about 12 years old and ran the scene for quite a while and got into proto and everything. And then that's actually what brought me out to California was BMX kind of faded off a little bit in the Texas scene. And only place that I'd seen it really strong was still in California, and it drugged me out this way. So did that for a little bit and got into some other stuff, motocross, snowboarding, and then was working at a bike shop. And I had a customer come through, and it was the first time I'd actually seen a downhill bike. Even though I was working at a shop, our shop didn't really cater to that type of, you know, cycling at the time. So I got a guy come in with a full downhill bike. It was a mountain cycle.
And I've owned one of those.
Yeah, I was just blown away by the thing with the oversized tires and the forks. I'm like, man, what is this thing? He's like, hey, get on it and rip down these stairs. We had a set of stairs in the back of the shop outside, and rip down the stairs and hit that curb head on. I'm like, what, do you want to see me go with the bars for the hell of it? And he's like, tell me, just do it. I'm just, trust me. Ripped down the stairs, the whole thing, and just sucked it all up. I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. So long story short, a couple coworkers, we started looking for parts. We pieced together a bunch of parts, got together with a group of like six guys, and we hit Downeyville, which isn't too far from my house here. Two runs on that, and I was sold. I mean, I'm like, I'm in. You know, I hadn't really done the BMX for a while. And to me, it was kind of a collaboration of like BMX early days, the go for it, the send feel of snowboarding and motocross, kind of just balled up, you know, into downhilling. And I loved all those other sports. I really missed the camaraderie of BMXing. Didn't feel like I got that as much in some of the other sports of motocross and snowboarding. Not that they're, you know, that you can have a good time with your friends, but to me, those sports were kind of almost specialized in the sense of not everyone has a moto. You know, it's not always running all the time to get a group together. You know, it's expensive. Same with the snowboarding, your lift tickets, your passes, you know, getting your boots and all your gear. But everybody seems to have a bicycle, and you can go ride a bicycle with just about anyone, you know, mom, dad, brother, sister, cousins. And so to me, it kind of really brought back in my head how much I miss that from the BMX world, and was like, I dove in full swing. So yeah, I just really got into it heavy. At that point, it was just like, couldn't get enough of it. Was like, started looking up where to go, take it to trails. Was there any resorts running in all yet? You know, all that kind of stuff. Just, I was full in.
Let's timestamp that. What, I'm guessing you're talking the 90s if you brought up mountain cycle, because that's, you know, that's kind of mountain cycle's heyday.
Yeah, this was been in the 90s for sure. So for me to get into it, started kind of playing around a little bit, probably would have been about, I'm going to say about 98. Yeah, about 98 when I really kind of got into it, because my first kind of venture into that world of it would have been at right around 2000 going to Sea Otter. And that would have been my first like big event experience, trying to race, you know, the Dual Slalom and a downhill time. So that's really 2000s where things really kicked in for me.
You went all in then, because Red Bull Rampage didn't start too far after that.
It didn't. You know, I went from that part of it and then just started getting back to my roots of like, well, you know, even though I got a full downhill bike, I want to go back to the bike park. And the only thing I could really find was like decent jumps. I mean, I've always been, I like descending and stuff and not a huge climber, but if that gets you to somewhere to go, then that's what you got to do. But I'm just, I love gravity. I love jumping. I've always have. Even when I race BMX, I would always ride and practice more for the jumps than actually to race. That's just my forte. That's just really been my passion, you know? And so that world of having something with suspension, which was kind of what I got again from the motocross, was, and that I just felt like, you know, the mountain biking just offered just such a different world. And like I said, yeah, I went full fledged. And so to go from like a newer rider to Rampage in that short window was a good group of friends and a lot of good riding in the short window. Yeah, and some people that were on my side at the time were all just kind of one of those, you know, is it the right place at the right time?
Yeah, I mean, that was, if I remember right, I'm going to throw out a name that hasn't been, he's an awesome rider and awesome coach, but you haven't heard much of him lately, is Shams March, you know, and he rode a mountain cycle way back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and one of my early ventures in doing some video stuff, Ed ran across Shams. The first time, you know, we'd actually personally met, and we were doing a little photo shoot, video session back at down south, not quite LA, some random place we were riding, but it was cool. I met him and I was hitting this jump, and it was funny that, you know, he was such a known racer and good rider that he said, "Hey, can you tow me into this jump?" I'm like, "Shams wants me to tow him in this jump." I'm like, "All right." You know, so we sessioned this jump for a while. It was cool. Cool introduction to like personally meeting Shams and getting a session with him, which was really cool.
We're going to jump around a little bit.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about racers from that era, I reached out to a former coworker of yours, goes by the name Steve Kosacek.
Yeah. Did an interview with him.
Yeah. Yeah. And we communicate pretty regularly. I've done some field work with him too. So he's
awesome.
Steve is awesome.
Yeah. He's a good dude.
Steve asked me to bring Missy Giovi to Walden's Ridge.
I was not expecting that interaction in that place at that time. The last people I would have expected to see was Missy Giovi out there walking around with us. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, obviously knew who she was forever and ever. And yeah, we were doing some trail work and trail design out in Tennessee. And there was another, can't remember the company she was working for at the time, but she showed up as their representative. And yeah, we hiked around and we're looking for lines and hits and jumps and hanging out with Missy in the middle of the woods.
That had to have been totally random.
Totally random. You know, it was just fun too. And just listening to some of her stories just over the years and where she, you know, what she'd gone through and what she'd done and where she was at a time in her life and what she was passionate was and stuff. Yeah. Good experience and good history lesson there, but just from, you know, some of her stories that she was going through and stuff, because we spent a bit of time, you know, it's only the three of us walking around the woods for a couple of days and then, you know, a couple sessions at the evening local bar.
I did reach out to a handful of people see if I could get some good stories for this one. And Tony Boone is another one. But let's talk about, you know, going from, you know, starting out at Red Bull Rampage, you know, what places did you start traveling to? Because eventually you got into the drop-in TV series, like we just talked about. And that would have been, was that like 2007, 2008 timeframe, maybe?
It would have been. Yep. Somewhere around there. Yeah. I had just met those guys randomly, you know, run across them. I heard about the, you know, I knew what those are going about dropping and so forth. And then, I get a phone call and, from one of the guys that were putting it all together. "Hey man, we're going to do a New Zealand trip. You want to come out?" I'm like, you know, I'd love to. I don't know if I can make it happen. They're like, "Hey, it's taken care of. You just show up, whatever you want to spend money on for your fun time, and we're good to go. And we're going to do 2 months, both islands. You could come as you want, or you can stay for the whole thing." I'm like, "Well, if that's a chance to go to New Zealand, I'm there from A to B, man. Give me the 2 months. I'm ready." That was awesome. To be able to experience so many little towns in between both islands, 2 months. We had some riders come and go. So that interaction with everybody and all the different trails we got to ride. I was pretty lucky to get to experience that. You know, those were some memorable moments in life for sure.
Yeah. And talk about a mountain bike paradise.
The place is beautiful. It is. It's pretty unreal. You know, it's developed so much from since we were there to the point now. But at the time, you know, Dream Track was still rolling. That was, you know, had left over from one of the New World videos, and they were still having that area. So at the time, like, that was still some of the larger big features to hit in the world, you know. So to be able to experience that place and session that for a few days was definitely a check off the box. Like, all right, you got the Dream Track.
In that time frame, was there other, I mean, did other places that you had traveled to that were as, I'm going to say, I don't know if advanced is the right word, but as advanced in terms of like purpose-built mountain bike stuff in that era?
Not so much other than Whistler. I mean, Whistler, you know, luckily that place had only been running for a couple of years. So to be able to go to Whistler and see what they had and the progression they had at that time and to where they're at now, and to be able to travel over years and years as the mountain developed, just to see everybody's, you know, take on what you can build out in a field. You know, like Whistler is such a wide canvas for, it's pretty awesome that they let those guys do what they do there. You know, you go on some of the trails and you're like, this is for the public. This, anyone can go ride this stuff. You know, if you got it in you, go get it. But there wasn't a lot of places at the time that offered that to that level. And it's amazing that I think with them setting that groundwork for ski resorts enabled a lot of other resorts to expand like they have as well, and just really put out some stuff that's, you know, makes you want to go spend that check and spend your money, go out there and have a good time.
Yeah. Well, you've had a front row seat for like that whole evolution of purpose-built trails, right? Because early, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, there really wasn't purpose-built stuff at that point.
There really wasn't. No, there wasn't much. Like I said, Whistler definitely had the lock on it at that point.
Yeah.
You know, and they were the first ones to start with Joyride. You know, that was that first year to really put on an event like that, ski resort and stuff. So yeah, to be on that cusp of when that door was just starting to crack open was pretty neat. You know, now that's blown wide open now. So, but yeah, to be on those kind of like earlier days of a lot of that stuff was, I guess you can look at a couple different ways. You know, like you see stuff now, you're like, man, I wish I was in the now. But at the same time, it's cool to be a pioneer. You know, someone's got to take that route. And it was awesome to be a part of that. And I mean, our group was small, you know, really is the overall three routers around the world. That was a pretty small group. So to see where that has started and where it's at now, it's neat to know that might have had some impact on somebody out there, hopefully.
I think so. And definitely an impact on how bikes have changed too, because that's another evolution we've seen.
Yeah. I mean, my first bike we put together was an old Specialized FSR. Yeah. I thought I had the best bike in town.
It might have been then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tony Boone asked me to ask you about a certain ride in the Philippines.
So I go to the Philippines and it was a design job. And there was an island that we were on, because I think there's over 7,000 in the Philippines. And this particular gentleman that brought us over he had actually ventured out to Whistler. So he was very progressive for a country like the Philippines to see that vision and want to bring it there. They at the time had a massive, and it may still be one of the bigger wakeboard parks, all tow-in style with the tow rope running around. So all that material they had pulled out to make their lake, which, because there wasn't a lake there, so they pulled all this material out, stuffed it off to the side, and then they wanted to build something Whistler-esque, whatever they could. So in that time frame, we're just there venturing around and, you know, seeing what was there, meeting the people, looking at the terrain. So while this is going on, there's a festival, and I forget what they call the festival. It's a few days festival. Bunch of people come to this little particular area that we happen to be at. So I meet these locals and some other people that come into town, and they invited me out for the evening. Festival ran through the night. I'm solo by myself. Well, next thing you know, gin comes out. Well, they're mixing it with basically Kool-Aid. So I'm thinking I'm drinking Kool-Aid, Gatorade, you know, just talking, having a good time going at it. So the locals were like, hey, we had fun. We want to take you to a downhill trail tomorrow. Can you meet us at like 6-7 in the morning? I'll be there. Let's go. I'm ready to do some riding. I'm in. I show up full downhill gear, helmet and all. Well, these guys are all cross country bikes. And I'm like, I'm already in trouble. And so we venture probably an hour away, and we're pedaling. We got to meet guys from other towns. They're going to meet up with us. And at this point, I'm already carrying way too much gear. I got way too much on. So I'm riding with my full face in my arm because I'm, you know, cross country. It's Philippines. The humidity level and the heat are just through the roof here. I mean, just sitting there talking, I'm sweating to death, you know, these people, and they're like dry as can be. So they're just laughing at me. Anyways, so we're meeting these people. We're about an hour or two in, and next thing you know, the gin kicks in. And I'm like, hey guys, I got to step off in the woods and maybe, you know, make myself feel a little better. I've never thrown up that much in my life. I'm like blown away. It wouldn't stop. Well, so obviously this is causing dehydration. I got water and stuff. We ride, and we must have rode for half a day, got lost with the group, split up. So it's me and another guy for a couple hours. We finally meet the group up. We're heading in the right direction. We're on this long gravel, dusty road. Next thing you know, I'm not sweating. I notice the walls are coming in. So I'm like, okay, I'm getting tunnel vision. I'm going out. This is bad. This is really bad. I feel my heart beating. I'm like, I'm dying from dehydration. So I'm like, I got to find a bush. I got to focus and stay focused to find a bush so I can just get some shade. Cruise along, I see a bush and I just dive right into it. I hit the ground and I can feel my heartbeat. I'm just trying to like calm myself down, just trying to mellow out, just trying to swallow and get some spit back in my mouth. Well, off in the distance, the group I was with, I can hear him like, Randy, you need to come over here. Come over here. I've been like 50 feet away. It felt like every ounce of energy it took for me to just crawl and get on my bike, get to them. Well, they were underneath some palm trees. Get over there. Next thing you know, they see what's going on. I'm back on the ground. You could see all my muscles contracting from dehydration. They're like, this is bad. I'm like, this is bad. It's bad. Sorry, guys. You know, this is bad. And so this part right here is mind blowing. So a couple guys take off. One guy climbs a tree, starts ripping coconuts out. And I'm trying to get pictures of him while I'm just trying to hang in there. But he's taking his bike tool and he's just hammering coconuts. You know, these guys are super smart. They're like, look, you need coconuts juice. You got electrolytes in there. You got good water. You got to get hydrated as fast as we can. I'm like, yes, yes. But same time, I'm laughing. And they're like, why are you laughing? I'm like, this is awesome. I'm like, I feel like I'm dying, but you guys are saving my life. This is so real. And so another guy's rubbing my legs and they're like, why are you still laughing? I'm like, I don't know if my buddies would be rubbing my legs right now while I'm laying on the ground. I'm like, this is just, I can't believe this is going on. So they're giving me fluids and they're rubbing me down. Well, next thing you know, a mother and her daughter walk up and they've got juice from golden coconuts, which are the really good stuff. So, and they got some coconut meat. So I'm eating the meat and drinking it and everything. And next thing you know, I'm like, okay, I could feel myself coming back alive. And I can't quite get up because everything was spazzed out. So they stand me up. At this point, I finally like felt like I could take that first breath. Like, okay, I feel like it's all coming back. My senses are coming back, starting to get my color back. Well, in the Philippines, from what I understand, is if you marry into Philippine woman, you tend to help the family as much as you can. You put in your support, you give back to the community. Well, this lady's daughter's about 12, and she's tried to, I don't know how to word this, but I don't know if she was trying to offer me here, her daughter as my new wife, but she's pushing, and you're like, you know, my daughter. And I'm like, I have a picture of me standing with my arm off to the side in the most awkward position, like, she's great, thanks for helping me, but I don't want to take her home. I'm married and I got a couple, you know, I'm good. Super funny. So everything was cool there. Get back on the bike. You know, I go from tunnel vision, about to pass out, thinking I'm dying, to now I'm back doing wheelies and high-fiving these guys that saved me. So we get back to the hotel we're staying at. And, you know, these guys were amazing. They had nothing, but they had everything, if that makes sense. You know, they so poverty, but so positive at the same time. Their bikes were ragged. Their clothes were ragged. These guys were so strong and great riders that I was leaving the next day. So I'm literally tearing my bike apart and giving them pieces off my bike. And I'm giving the clothes off my back, literally my shoes, like just anybody that needed something. And they're like, no, they didn't want to take it. And I'm like, look, you guys literally saved my life. This is the least I could do. Just take something from me. It's going to make me feel better to leave you with something. So years passed and there was a gentleman that owned a local shop there that his name is Eric that I'd befriended on this trip. Well, we've stayed friends ever since then to this day. And Eric contacts me once or twice a year to say hi and check in as well. It was really cool. He had mentioned that all these guys still have all this stuff I had gave them because it meant so much to them because they had so little. And I, that was just so heartfelt. So yeah, that venture in the Philippines that day was, I'll never forget it. You know, just to know that a group will take care of you in a situation like that. And you go from thinking like, this is it to like, high fives, wheelies, and here's some goods on the end. Yeah, pretty heartfelt, that one.
That's a wild story. And I would think that's the wildest story, but you've also been struck by lightning twice.
Yes, that was...
And that story's been told, but Steve also told me to ask you, because there is a really good Red Bull comic about it on TV,
well,
or on YouTube.
They wanted to, they wanted to do like a... When we hit 10 years, they wanted to, like, besides the riding, they wanted, like, what was the craziest thing that happened to Rampage? And it came up. Someone's like, well, you know, Randy got hit by lightning twice on a build day. And everyone's eyes are like, what? And so a guy named Scott Hart, he's in the industry, been a long time. He actually competed in Rampage back in the days, works with, I think, Commensal now. Awesome guy. Well, he calls me up and is like, hey, tell me the story. I'm like, well, what for? And he's like, just tell me the story. So we're on the phone. So I tell him the story. We'll kind of find out. We're at Rampage, and it's that week, you know, we're coming into it, and he's like, hey, you need to go on, Red Bull TV or whatever, or the media house stuff. And I'm like, for what? He's like, just click on there. I want you to see something. Well, little did I know that they made a cartoon of it. So it was voicing my story why this guy drew a cartoon. The cartoon is hilarious. I couldn't believe how good the animation looked, like myself and Bender and so forth. But yeah, it was really crazy. We're up on top of the site. We're right at the top of the peak. In fact, it was the site we were just at last year. This was earlier on. And at that time, Ben and I had chiseled to the top, because prior to that, we were starting on the ridge below. And we as builders felt like that's the progression of the sport. We got to take them to the top. And some of the promoters and so forth didn't feel like that could ever happen. So Ben and I, that was our mission. Like the two of us, just chisels, hammers, dragging up rock saws up to the top to, like, we're getting people to the top, which we did. And so Chris Van Dyne happened to be the first rider out that year. And he walks up, I'm on top, and he's just blown away. We got him up there. And so I happen to be holding a pick and a shovel in each hand. They're touching the ground. I'm just, you know, talking to him. As we're talking, he's like, doesn't state in the video, but he's like, dude, you're fucking blue. He's like, you're fucking, he's screaming it. And I can hear him. I can't move. I can't talk. But he said my teeth and my eye, the whites of my eyes and my teeth were glowing blue. So I'm getting hit. Luckily, it wasn't a bolt. I was getting static charge, but so heavily that, like I said, I literally couldn't let go of anything. I couldn't move. I could hear fine. That was it. I'm just locked in. And next thing you know, it stops. I threw the tools down. He's like, holy crap. So we take off running. Bender's on the ridge below chiseling away at something. So I jump to him and I'm like, I just got nailed by a light. And he's like, no way. Bam. So I'm charged up. It hits me again. This one takes me to the ground. And I'm just getting fried. And I tell him the video, but my left arm, for some reason, like every hair, I could feel every individual hair standing on end, just getting electrified. And my arm was locked solid. Like the rest of my body could move. But for some reason, that left arm was just, nope, it's just going to stay there locked. And then that stopped. And then we're just blown away. So I'm like, okay, let's just get out of here. Let's go to lunch. Let's go home. Go back to the house. Thought I was pretty good. We go back to work. And I pass out on a cliff for like 20 minutes. I'm literally just done. Like, you know, I got electrically fried. Crawl back home. And luckily, everything panned out. Yeah, it's back for the next day of work. And it was all good.
Well, in the video, it shows you like wheelied home on an animated motorcycle.
Yeah. I had a dirt bike out there. So I crawled down the hill and was just kind of held onto the bars and just was like, just make it to the house.
Those are two really incredible stories.
Yeah. You know, it's life has definitely offered me plenty of those, which luckily I'm still here to tell half of them.
It's both those stories are pretty, you know, obviously from an entertainment value, pretty awesome to hear you talk about them, but also really fortunate.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the one in the Philippines, like I said, it was really scary, but I didn't really let it, you know, overwhelm me mentally, but it was on that kind of crazy fine line because dehydration is just no joke, especially out there. And then the one at Rampage was scary because that start on that site is only say 3-4 feet wide. So if I would have stumbled at all, that would have been it. You know, I'd have went tomahawking and I was locked, so I couldn't save myself or move. So I just kind of went to the bottom. So yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that. What was the transition from rider to builder? And actually, and not just Rampage builder, but like builder in the commercial sense.
Right. For sure. Yeah. I was still competing at that point, and I'm in my local town here. I live in Northern California. town of Auburn, and there's a town, Folsom, not too far from me, you know, Folsom State Prison, Johnny Cashlog and all that. So there's a guy who at the time was working for IMBA, was Judd Duvall, who started his own company later on, Alpine Bike Park. So I had a friend call me there. Hey, there's a guy down here in Folsom and he's going to be putting a bike park in. You got to come down here and talk to this guy. What's up? You know, so I ripped down there and I had met Judd through the race scene and, you know, through the years and so forth. So instantly, hey, what are you doing? And so this is kind of my first introduction to any of that actual, like looking at it as far as, okay, what's going to be my give back once I stop competing, you know, So basically he's like, hey, I'm here to flag a park. This is your local, you know, this is pretty much your local town, even though you're not too far off. He's like, do you want to help design it? Heck yeah. I think it'd be great. Whether he just didn't feel like working that day and was sawyering it off to somebody else, I don't know. But he let me flag it all out and he liked the flag that we put out and the concept and we moved forward with it. So it wasn't really, I was working for him. It was just like a day thing. And it was like, that kind of inspired me like, okay, this could be kind of a cool little avenue. Yeah, I'd worked in bike shops for years. Didn't know if that was something I didn't want to go back and to and forth, but didn't take it super serious. Enjoyed the day doing that stuff. Well, now we're moving down a little bit, still competing. Now Judd has his own company. Calls me up and he's like, hey, I've started Alpine Bike Parks. Would you like to be a part of it? I like the, you know, the camaraderie we had at, in Folsom there. And what do you think? And I'm like, I'm in. Yeah, you know, let's do it. I'm, you know, because I'm competing, but I'm not going as heavy as I was, you know, still. But he was like, hey, you just keep doing your thing. You work with me and we can just make it all happen. So it was Judd and I for a few years doing that. Built some really cool stuff. Eagle Bike Park, Eagle, Idaho, Valmont, helped do a lot of design and build with that. Trying to get the name of it out at it's a trail system out on the coast, the Lost Coast. But that was another so some fun builds and designs. So it was through him, he really opened that door for me to start venturing the design world. Same time, I was, you know, he brought me out to his property in Canada at the time and was renting equipment for me to just get used to running different equipment, excavator, skid steers, and I'm like a kid in a candy store. This is like a new venture, you know? And to me, if the sense of like, if I was going to be a construction guy, to me, that's, you know, like go grade this out, do this. But the thought of like being creative with machinery, I was all over because, you know, I've been digging and building for years, you know, doing all the stuff we do, but kind of take that next level was definitely something exciting for me, you know, like, okay, it's just spark like creativity and start thinking about all the places you've ridden and all the different terrain you've been on. You're like, how could I incorporate my vision into any of this? And it was, you know, I give Judd a lot that he kind of opened that door for me to venture my way.
And then from there, was that from him? Is that when you transitioned over to IMBA?
Yeah, sort of. So it was work with Alpine. And then we're actually working on Valmont at the time. And we had a little break and we're out in Colorado. Ride some trails and stuff. And next time I get a phone call and it's from Red Bull. We like what we've seen from your work. And we know you're a part of it. You competed back in the day. What do you think about becoming one of our builders? Because at that time for the builders for Rampage, we actually would build quite a bit on the course compared to nowadays. And so I was like, I had to put the phone to the side and, you know, had my excitement of screaming, yeah, Red Bull's calling, go through Rampage. Well, I was all over it. So that didn't really jive with Alpine at the time because we're trying to finish Valmont Bike Park, which at the time was one of the biggest bike parks to come on to play. But for me, you know, I'm going to ride at the same time and like it's Red Bull. So, you know, I called another rider to take my place or builder rider, take working for Valmont, ran it by Judd. He's like, yeah, I get it. You know, go do your thing. But it just didn't really jive how it should. So anyway, so that was a split for us. So after Rampage build that year, and now I'm back on my own and I'm still, you know, riding stuff. So I'm like, I'm not taking it too bad. You know, it was a cool little venture. And then I got a call from IMBA and they're like, hey, we, you know, all that trail building industry all kind of runs together and you lots, you know, chatting. So it was pretty easy to find out like I had left with Alpine and the door was open. And so they're like, would you like to come in? You know, we've got Trail Solutions we're starting and we think you'd be a big, good part for that. And, it just panned out and I said, yeah, let's just dive in. And I knew they had a lot on the, you know, a lot going as far as a lot of opportunities and that, you know, being international, I think, okay, I'm going to get some travel out of this to check out different terrain and different types of build. Cause you know, you can build just about anywhere. And it's amazing how much different dirt is all over the world. mean, you could take the same pile of dirt, move it to another state, and it's going to act different. So to me, that was just like another venture, like experience, and take it all in. Just keep putting it in my head, you know, just keep filling that pile up with all this different stuff. So I was all over it. And within that, yeah, they were really open to as well. And trying different machinery, trying different techniques, just trying to keep up with modernization of this trail building was moving along. This trail building was growing. Like, how could we keep progressing? And, you know, with them, they knew the world I came from. So they tend to literally let me kind of take on more of those gravity type, whether it be flow, jump, you know, that was more, they knew that I wasn't going to be the guy really laying down on the cross country stuff so much. If I had to, for sure, but that wasn't my forte. And it was cool. They were like, no, we want you to go the route you enjoy. And I was with them for, I think up until, what do I want to say, 2019? Yeah, 18, 19? Yeah, last job with them would have been out of Sandy Ridge in Oregon. And I was able to, fun trail, Johnny Royale's trail that I got to build out there. And so I think that was the last trail I actually built with them. Job after that would have been one last design build, which would have been with Steve Kaczacek and Missy out there in Tennessee, which would have been later that year. And yeah, that was the last of my venture with him. But, and then just kind of was like, you know, if I can't do this on my own, maybe I should just venture out and take something else on. So since then, I've been lucky enough to keep it going. I'm not under a company. I don't have a company. I just book for anybody that rings in my phone. It's been cool. I've been able to do a lot of community builds, local bike parks. I've done in my area, which is really great because I've got a lot of where I live. There's a lot of people with land. And kind of around that COVID area, a lot of families had trips planned and that money went to, okay, we can't go anywhere. So we're just going to build on our property for our kids, which to me was like, why wouldn't you? That's great. And so I've got a lot of local builds that I've done and stuff. So been able to keep it going now for 5-6 years, and looks like the window's still staying open, which as long as it can, I'll take it.
Yeah. And we're going to get into that in a little bit. I got a job that keeps getting on my radar that a couple people asked me to ask you some stuff for, which is Coldwater Mountain, Alabama.
Yeah. Yeah.
Marcus Tillman told me that he came up and like pulled you off the mountain one day when a big storm was coming in.
Yeah. They were a little nervous. I've had that a couple of times now. I was out in Sun Valley building once and, same thing though. You need to get off the hill, man. There's some serious lightning. You're like the guy that's going to get lit up. Get out of there. But you know, you get going and you get building and you get, I get so focused that, you know, everything else just kind of closes off and I'm looking at trail and I'm thinking, what's the next feature? And so Mother Nature's just doing what she does. And you're like, I got to get out of here. I'm in a metal machine, you know, holding all these handles that are metal. Like some of them have metal tracks. You're like, probably not the best thing to be sitting on top of a hill while there's a thunder and lightning storm going down.
Well, speaking of metal tracks, here's another Tony Boone one. A Sweco 450 at Coldwater. He told me, this is pretty funny. He told me that the first week you were there, you tipped it over, but then within minutes, went and grabbed a Mini X to dig a hole next to it to tip it back upright.
Well,
and then just carried on.
The worst time to roll a machine over is when your boss and your coworkers are standing right there. I literally back up. It just happened to be like a 2-foot curve, and it was just perfect angle to roll the machine on its side. So me being first than I am, I'm already out of the machine before it's even on the ground. I'm literally standing there and I'm like, look at that. There's the bolt loose down here. And I mean, this is the easiest way I could get a wrench on it. You know, just trying to like hide my embarrassment. I'm like, oh my God. So yeah, luckily we flipped it over. Everything's cool. Got the machine off. Didn't ruin any motor parts or anything stuff. So yeah, learning experience. Didn't put one on the side after that at all. I've had two machines on their side and that's been it for me. Knock on wood, that doesn't happen again. But you know, you learn a lot as you're taking all this on, and you know, you get out in some of these environments you're digging in, you know, the pitches and the height, and you get a surprise rock that pops out of the ground and it's hidden behind your track and you back up and you're like, oh, here it comes, you know. So it's just experience. It's just time. You know, you just become a better operator. Your visuals, your surroundings, you know, you just start taking more and more in.
Yeah. And Marcus Tillman gets a hold of me regularly, kind of like Tony Boone via text. And he's told me that Coldwater has like the hardest rock that most people have ever seen.
You know, you dig and it's you're hoping to find dirt to bring back into hiding up some of this rock. That place got a lot of rock and it's not smooth. It's jagged, nasty. They got plenty of rock. You know, it's almost like slowing things down when you go there. You know, it's where I live, there's such a hustle and bustle. And for me out there, it was like, oh, I get to kind of like the pace, just slow down a little bit, you know, different part of the U.S. and back east, and some really good people out there, like Marcus himself. But that whole group that really pushes that town and that whole area, because I know they've developed some other places from that, was like, you know, Anniston, like that was kind of their first get-go. Now there's a couple other local spots that they've really developed. So that, to see that they've blown that up for where they're at when they're training, they have, it's cool to be a part of it.
Yeah. You've been here in the, like we talked about a couple times, you've kind of been in the evolution of how trail building has been purpose built for mountain biking. Like, what are your thoughts more currently of like the evolution of both trail design and like how things have changed and probably will continue to change? Do you have any thoughts on where it is now compared to where it was?
Yeah, for sure. I think the biggest part is just seeing some of the new builders that are coming in, and, you know, obviously they've looked at the history of it. They've seen what's been built. So of course you're going to be like, I can do one better. And some of these guys are, which is great. But then also you have machines that have advanced, you know, machinery, like on the excavators, you know, to have the wrists and stuff, you know, that's a game changer right there. And then just, you know, I think it's just like any company or anytime, you know, you're able to pull up so much more stuff offline and you're able to look at things in a variance. Like if you really look at all the equipment they have for whether it be the skid steer, the excavator, you know, there's so many attachments you can bring in and pull on that, the stuff you can achieve now out in the field is incredible.
Do you have a favorite tool or machine that you personally prefer to operate in?
You know, it's funny, when I first got into it, I was all about skid steer. I felt like a skid steer does everything. It's the best because they're fast, right? They're quick. They can move a lot of material. But once I really learned and spent time in an excavator, that's just an extension of your body, actually. You know, you got an arm out there. I'm going to pull this over here. I'm going to throw it over there. And you still have the blade. So those two tools for me are like, you can't beat them. You put those two tools together and you small hand crew and you're knocking it out. That's awesome. Because you can add so many attachments to both those two features, and whether it be hammers or diggers or sifters, it just goes on to grapplers. You can just keep going with these things. So to me, the mechanism thing's been great. But at the same time, you know, I think it's still good that, you know, you want to leave some traditional in there, because, you know, not everyone wants the mechanized trail. Everyone doesn't want the smooth sidewalk or a flow trail. Like, give me some rock, give me some root, give me some tech. But as far as the mechanical side, some of the stuff you're seeing nowadays is getting built out there. And I think also it's just how people are riding it, you know, perceiving it. So I think it's great where it's at personally.
We are definitely in a golden era. And it's, you're right though. There is, I think we're hearing a lot more about people wanting more traditional style trail again, you know, the narrow, nasty stuff.
Yeah. You get overwhelmed with so much of, at the time it was like, I've seen this flow, this build, the smooth. But then you're like, wait, I did like that chunky, rocky, nasty, technical. Like, it kind of scares me if I fall off my bike. So I think if we can continue on forward and not leave that part out, because that's the roots of it, right? That's really what brought a lot of us to. It's just riding old goat paths or old horse trails or goat trails or whatever. You know, that's the rawness is what really kind of brought people, not everyone, but a lot of people into it. And so I don't think we need to lose all that. So I think it's a mix of both, you know, but I think the mechanism for most newer riders is a really easy thing to bite off as you're bringing people into it, especially newer riders, because it is a little more forgiving. You can take them on some good grades that, you know, it's been graded correctly. You know, the percentages are for them top to bottom is going to work out. It's not like, you know, if you take them on some of those old trails, well, you may have some steep, nasty fall line and all that, which is fun. But for a beginner rider, that's where maybe that mechanism trail building still is going to do really positive and well, especially for like a, you know, resort or something like that.
Oh, for sure. And it helped us get a lot more people into the sport, which helps everyone.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on jump design? That's a topic that's been coming up more recently here. Recently did a show with a company called Rocket Ramps and had Shea Farrell on and the McGills. But what are your thoughts on jump design? You know, original or old school jumps are kind of more modeled around 26 inch wheeled bikes or dirt jumpers, even, you know, or even 20 inch wheeled bikes. But now that we see bikes have gotten longer, lower and slacker, even though I think that trend is now slowing down, like how have you adapted jumps to that? Or have you adapted jumps to, you know, the changing of bike designs?
I have actually, last year at one of our local bike parks. It's literally 5 miles from my house here. This one's really kind of my baby because it's in my local town. So, you know, it's a little bit of pressure to put out a pretty good product. And plus, same time, it's something I want to ride a lot because it's right here back of the yard. But I actually do a lot of snowboarding, and I kind of started snagging little kind of ideas and concepts from the ski building world, snow building world, that terrain park. Because if you look at some of the, perfect example is for me, I want to do something progressive at our park, but we also have limitations for the community, for the county, what they want to see. So you got to push that fine line of how can we make this progressive for guys that are really good riders, borderline want to go pro to, you know, kid just get into it. So for me, when I started going out to the train parks in the snowboard world, I'm looking at the landings and the shakes. You know, if you look at them, they'll put a lip in the middle, you know, got your kicker. But then off to the sides, I was noticing they were rolling the terrain over so that when they're coming up, they can slide next to the lip, slide over if they weren't ready or comfortable. And you've got this nice, huge, round dome shape, right? It's massive. So now you've taken away the vertical wall that's going to fall. You've taken away the nasty case point. You've given it this little bit more service. You've also given a way out. If you're coming out of your offline, you're sketchy. You don't have to skid up, come into it and wreck everything as you're coming into it. You just roll over the sides of it. And for some people, it was great. Hey, I can get used to that feel of like the speed and so forth without hitting the lip yet. And it went over great. And what was mind boggling for myself was we did our first jump jam at the park this year. And, you know, our biggest ramps are 6 foot down this one stretch. It's on a bit of downhill, so that, you know, get some good flow, good momentum, gravity's taking you down. But it was cool that in our jump jam, the most impressive group was the 11 class, whatever. I think we had 11 to 13 or 10 to 13, something like that. The fact that those kids were sending the jumps and comfortable because the visual aspect was an avert wall that if they cased it, they're going to just wreck themselves. They had the rollers on the sides they could get through if they weren't feeling it. So that group was shredding that day. And I think a lot of that was due to the design that I happened to see and come up with in my head. So I think there's still lots of opportunities to keep working forward on what's going to be not necessarily the standard, but what's going to work well and what's going to help advance more people coming to want to learn jumping, you know, because everybody likes to catch a little air. But it's that, you know, it's a little scary. And how do you really take someone to an area and go, send it, you're going to be good, you know? And so if you can help build that, I think that kind of takes a little bit of that factor of the, okay, I'm going to get broke off. I just want to, you know, I want to go home at the end of the day and know I caught air and just didn't get wrecked for it. So I'm trying to pull that world. And, you know, that was just something I came across. And I'm sure there's going to be other things that people have done, you know, other ways to come about this. For me, it seemed to have worked well. On top of that, you mentioned the ramps, and I think the ramps is huge for parks these days. Not let's say a ski resort, you know, it may here and there, but for like a city park, I think the ramps are just, that's really the way to go. The maintenance goes down. You know, you can have a landing that's a little bit rough and it's still going to be rideable, but it's those takeoffs. If they can stay consistent, that's just going to help everyone. Maintenance is going to help your confidence level. You come out one day and if it's dirt, somebody may have scraped a little bit here, put a little more kicker. Next, you know, somebody's getting bucked, what have you. And that's just more work for somebody to come back. And it just turns into a bit of a headache. Not that I want dirt lips to go away. I love hitting dirt to dirt. But as in the majority, I think like your more focused features that start progressing in size as you move up to say like a 4, 5, 6, 7, whatever you go, that's where I think the ramp thing is I think really going to come in and help preserve the parks that people are building and help everyone's advancement in riding, if that makes sense.
Oh, for sure it does. And it's easier for like park directors and stuff to kind of wrap their heads around because they can almost look at, and I've brought this up before, but they can almost look at features in catalogs like you look at playground equipment, right?
Right. Yeah. In fact, that's our local park. I wasn't a part of their ramp selection. So that's exactly what they did. They went through a catalog. They picked out what they wanted. You know, we've got like a wall ride, a couple of different size ramps, you know, you got your little snake backs and camel backs and stuff, but yeah, it's you pull up catalog and give me A, B, and C and 4 of those and 2 of those and 3 of those and we're good.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Auburn Bike Park. Let's get the full story on your what you have to say about it, because that's the bike park we're talking about, I'm assuming.
We are Auburn Bike Park. We are. you know, this is one of those parks that, you know, every community has their own fights and battles. Ours was a long one here. It was a 10 to 12 year process. Reason being, we have a skate park and we have a lot of equestrians. And our skate park was great, but things with skate parks. So a lot of local people want, what happened was where we were going to locate our bike park was going to be near the skate park. And skate parks are great. I love riding skate park. I always have, whether it be skating or biking. But if you think of a skate park, a lot of times skate parks tend to be, I guess, say, like, I'm a little bit of a rebel in the sense of like, I'm going to go to the park with my friends and we're just going to do our thing and we're going to talk smack and that's great and all. But, you know, they kind of like, to me, the skate parks are a little bit more of a getaway from the fam. I want to become my own little person. I want to figure out me. I want to be, you know, if I want to be a little badass or I want to, whatever. They're great. They're their own things. But as general, as the public, you know, there's a little more mayhem that happens in the skate park. There's a little more. So for us, you know, our local town didn't really want to see that. And the neighbors were kind of fed up a little bit. Not that they're taking the skate park down or anything. They just didn't. They felt like if we had a bike park, now we're going to double all this commotion, all this noise level, all the whatever, cursing and all the stuff goes with. So we had a big fight with that. The equestrians were putting up a big hiccup to it because we were trying to find other locations and they were like, you're too close to horses, so on and so forth. Anyways, finally got a spot 10 years later, just about to break ground. The equestrians come back. No, this used to be part of a pioneer trail, which pioneer trail was a big famous trail through this area. And they felt where we were building it, that was part of, there was a history thing involved. Well, it wasn't, but then money came into play of, okay, we need to put in fences for the horses. We need to do, you know, more investigating on what's in the land here. So all those processes and dollars just kept pushing us back, pushing us back. Luckily, got past all that, time to break ground. Well, I wasn't actually involved in the original bidding process. Again, I don't have a company. So a lot of towns, a lot of, you know, the times they'll go with the lowest bid when it comes to, you know, just saving the dollar. So the gentleman that bid on it was a construction man, you know, does great with what he does, infrastructure of parking lots, be it bridges and all those things. Anyways, he's confident. He'd seen a bike park, knew how to build it. Luckily, we have a lady that's very passionate here in town. Her name's Dana Boyer, and she's been our voice for the bike park since day one. And she really wanted a bike park builder to come there. She knew me and really, really pushed for myself to come build the park. Well, he obviously had the contract. It was his deal. And so they had chatted with him a lot, went through Parks and Recs, you know, explained their side of it for like, okay, great. You guys got a guy building it. We're breaking ground, but this guy's not really a bike park builder. Can he work with, you know, the guy's name is Frank. And so can Randy work with Frank and they can work together? So I go out, meet Frank. Frank's like, I don't think this is going to happen. I got it. You know, he's got his company. He's got his program. He's got his crew. And who am I going to come in and tell this guy how to do anything? You know, I'm just a bike rider in his mind. And so I go back to the head office for Park and Rec. And I'm like, I don't think this guy wants me trying to explain what to do. And I don't know if, I just don't know if we're going to jive. And so as he's working through his build, he got to the point where he's like, you know what? I want to see what this guy can do. Let him build a pump track. So that was our first actual feature on the ground. So he put in all the infrastructure for all the piping and the plumbing. Let's let this guy move the dirt. So I put in the dirt. He comes back out and leans over my shoulder and is like, you kind of know what you're doing. I'm like, you do too. So I just, you know, I had to give him his compliments as well, right? I'm like, I don't do all the stuff you do. You know, but this is what I do. And so that whole world changed for the two of us, for the parks, for everything, which was awesome. So he basically stepped away. And so since he had finished his parking lot for us and all that with, you know, the sewer systems and so forth to get the water out, he tied into some of the drainage systems of the city. So he walked away. And from there, they have let me come in and take over, and which has been awesome. So it's been great that the Park and Recs, Diana herself, they've really just, Randy, do what you do, make it fun, you know, do your thing. And so we've got two phases of the park. The first phase was pump track, a dual slalom, and some trails. So the pump track was already built, going great. People are loving it. Now we're up the hill on the dual slalom. And so Park and Rec comes out, and I've got this thing. It's on a pretty steep hillside, so I've got it just tore apart. And so the main parking director guy just taking some of his you know, some of the city councilmen around and showing him stuff. And he's just biting his tongue, like, yeah, this is great. And comes back to me later. He's like, I know you know what you're doing, but I'm really nervous. I'm like, because it's just blown up, right? I'm like, okay, I get it. Just come back in a week. It's one of those, like, let me finish and we'll talk after. So get it all finished up. And he's just blown away. We're lucky in that where the location we did end up getting for the park, it overlooks our river. And so you've got this beautiful sight. So the park is just kind of painted in a picture there. It's funny. People will come through and take photos. Oh, this is so beautiful. And the beauty was here. We just added a little picture in there for you. And so it's done really great for us. And then when we moved to phase two in the jump zone, and that's when the park is really just taken off now. So now we're into about 4 years. In fact, I'll be in there this summer doing just some facelifting, a couple of adjustments. We're going to add a little bit of some on one of the trails. We're going to add a little bit more to it and just keep it moving. It's not a big spot. So we've done about much as we can stuffing it in there. Just a matter of keeping it happy now.
That's a great story because it illustrates a lot of what happens behind the scenes that a lot of people listen to this show understand it, but the broader scope of the general public don't understand like how long it takes to get something like that done.
Yeah.
And then some of the nuances of the contracting aspect of it, because that's not the first time I've heard of a general contractor coming in to get a bike specific build, but they do great with infrastructure because that's their gig.
Right. But yeah, you're like, the thing is like, okay, you know, so I asked the guy, you know, can you hit a jump? Well, not really. I'm like, well, then how are you going to build it if you can't hit it? You know, how are you going to build a jump if you don't know what you're building? I'm like, that just makes no sense. Well, I've got it right here on a piece of paper. I'm like, okay, from that paper, you know for sure that that's going to work. Well, no. I'm like, exactly. This is what I'm trying to describe to you. Now, if you look on the piece of paper where that piece of pipe goes, connecting to this piece of pipe, oh, yeah, that's a 9x... I'm like, okay, because you know that world. Well, geez, you stick with that world. Let me take care of this world over here.
Let me help you with this world, and together we'll make this awesome. Yeah, that's good stuff. That's really good stuff. So outside of Auburn, like when you're going to ride, where are you typically taking off to ride these days? Regionally, or you know, it doesn't need to be a huge vacation, but you know, going for the weekend or whatever.
Luckily for where I live, there's quite a bit of riding in this area. You know, you got Downeyville, which from my house is maybe 40 minutes. Right now, I've been riding quite a bit in the Georgetown area, Garden Valley area. Josh Bender lives over that way now. He had a shuttle company for a while, so I was involved with him leading tours and stuff. And that basically is an area that was just old motocross. It still is. Moto trails, and there's just tons of them. And they link here, they link there. You got ups, downs, cross. So Josh was able to go through and figure out where all the gravity was and where we could pick up and drop off. And so that's probably about 45 minutes from my house. So those areas are super close. And it's as far as trail riding. Bike parks, I've got Auburn right here. I've got Truckee Bike Park up the road, which is about an hour, right there quite a bit. Elk Grove Bike Park from this area is not too far off my house. So those are all my local spots I can attend to ride.
Downeyville is a place that's on my super short list of places to go ride. I haven't been there. The closest I've been in recent years was when I went to Reno last year for the PTBA conference. But as we all know, last year, there was a lot of snow.
Yeah, we had a lot of snow last year. Yeah, for me, Downeyville, like I said, that was my kind of door opener to what it was. It's pretty cool. You park in town, you take the shuttle up, so you get a good chance to hang out in some kind of van or bus or something with a bunch of people that are excited to go ride. And the trail, it's evolved now. There's a lot out there now. But when I started, it was kind of the one main trail they had. And it's a little bit of everything. It was tech. It was steep. There was a fast section. It was like a mile long, just flow. You feel like you're in warp speed ripping through this thing. And from there, yeah, they've just built and built and built. And so that town has really been saved from cycling, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, for sure. Now they're doing the Sierra Buttes Trail Stewardship is doing that whole connected communities thing, which is a huge task.
Yeah, their stewardship's been running strong for several years now. They've got a good group of guys and they do some great building for that terrain they're in when there's not snow.
So we're going to go into a question that I'm changing it a little bit. I've kind of been toying with changing it as I get different guests on here, but for the modification for it this time is going to be, if you had a blank slate for designing and building a mountain bike community, what would it include?
The community and everything?
Yeah. Like say you're going to, yeah. Like you have the opportunity, money's no object. you have the train you want, you have everything you want. Like, what are the features or what are the things that you think, you know, it needs? And that could be anything from like community-based, you know, restaurants, whatever. Like, what are the, what do you like?
Community with like-minded people in that type of outdoor adventure world that wants to spend out time outside doing something that excites them so they could be more involved to whatever the town was offering. For me, obviously, probably majority cycling with some snowboarding in as well. I could get up and do some snow turns myself. But yeah, ultimate terrain, perfect flow. Get in there and paint some pictures, trails, jump parks. That would be pretty incredible. Some good food, some good restaurants, a couple good bars. The Mecca. I mean, Whistler's not too far from that right now, aren't they?
Yeah. Or what's the other bike park over there? The Coast?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. So, you know, stuff like that where it's, you know, everybody's like-minded and just feeling it, just high fives and smiles.
Do you have any stories that we may have missed? Or maybe you could throw one out that, I don't know how much you worked with them. I'm sure you've worked with them some. Maybe you could throw a Tony Boone story out.
Because
Tony's been bugging me a lot, and we're all going to be at the PTBA conference together here coming up in March here in Georgia, which isn't too far off, really. It's only a couple weeks away. And we may be doing a Tony Boone Takes Over Trail Effect podcast and see what happens with that.
Yeah, I tell you, my first venture working with Tony was out in Sun Valley, Idaho. And we were doing some trail building. Knew of his name, you know, knew he's been in this for a long time. Well, we're out there going out in the town of Haley. And it was a section where we were doing mechanism and hand build. So I'm going at it with a pick, just hammering away. You know, we haven't really chatted much. Everyone's just doing their thing. And all of a sudden, Tony's like, Spangler, what are you doing? I'm just going to town. He's like, why don't you just get over here and just hang out and shoot the shit? So I can remember chucking the pick and kick back and boots up and sat there and learned some Tony Boone stories and who that guy was all about. And it's funny that kind of find out we're both, you know, from Texas. And so Texas, like any state, kind of have their stories. The next, you know, that brought up different worlds. So the interaction with Tony right from the get-go. And since then, I've worked with him a few times after that. Yeah, he's a good guy, good stories, amazing, amazing builder that has tons of knowledge. So especially with some of the machines as well, like the Swacos, that guy's been a part of those for a long time. So to get some of his knowledge, you know, called him a few times with that stuff. Yeah, I mean, that's if you know Tony Boone, you need some answers, you know, answers to some questions, he's got to go to.
Yeah, he's definitely a legend in the trail building and design world. He's been doing it for, you know, 3 decades or more.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I think the story was something like, I think he wants to say it was like, you know, Randy, I've built over like 500 miles of trail and there wasn't 1 mile that told me this job sucked. And I'm like, that was pretty cool. You know, I think another one of Tony Boone's was, somebody was asking something or it was like kind of a hectic situation. And he looks over and he's like, you know what? I'm just a guy on a machine. Just some of his comments are just really stuck in my head, you know? So yeah, whenever something comes up like that, sometimes I go to that one. I'm like, hey man, I'm just a guy on a machine.
That's totally in full Texas swagger too.
Yeah, right.
Well, before we wrap this thing up, do you have any closing comments or thank yous you want to throw out there? Thank yous could probably be a mile long, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Thank yous are a ton. Let me be it from, you know, as far as the trail building side, which we're talking about here, you know, guys like, Shed Duvall, cause that was, like I said, he was one that kind of opened that door for me at first. Rich Edwards, another guy who was great to be a part of and take his knowledge and work with him for lots of years was pretty incredible through EMBA. And then just some of the other builders I've worked with, because, you know, it's for me, I enjoy working with other builders because everyone's got a little different technique. So to me, you know, I might snag a little of that, put it in my toolbox and I might snag a little of that, put it in my toolbox. So interacting with tons of builders has been pretty incredible. Coming in on different projects with people. So yeah, I can keep going. Like I said, thanking people on and on. My parents, for sure, like my mom, my stepdad, you know, they always had their head behind me as far as like, you know, you put your head down, you do what you want. And so a lot to them, my wife, you know, be supportive, let me travel. Cause I tell you, I got kids and they're pretty supportive too. It gets a little tough, but they know I'm passionate about it and they know this is what dad really likes to do. And like, I don't think they'd want to see me if I was stuck behind four walls, you know, look at the same thing every single day. So it's been good. And for them too, you know, they've been able to come travel and see the world a little bit here and there through this thing. So that's not been a bad thing for us as a family.
Well, Randy, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day this fine Friday afternoon and coming on the show.
All right. Appreciate it. Yeah. Hopefully this goes somewhere good and people aren't like, this guy's just a kook out there, the machine.
We all have colorful personalities.
Yeah. Hopefully, right?
Thank you for listening. If you like what you've heard, please take the time to share these shows with others. Sharing these shows will help create awareness of both the guests who have taken the time to be on the show and the podcast series itself. Also, if you're new to the Trail Effect podcast, check out our ever-expanding library of episodes. If you listen to the Trail Effect podcast on Apple or Spotify, please don't forget to leave a rating and review, as this is one of the best ways to show our support for the Trail Effect podcast. Also, don't forget to check out Cooley Creative at www.dojustsendit.com. For additional ways to help support the Trail Effect podcast, check out the affiliate links tab at the Trail Effect website, where you'll find links to Kettle Mountain Apparel, Worldwide Cyclery, and Trail One Components. By using the affiliate links found at www.traileffectpodcast.com, a small commission will come back to the podcast, which will help keep this thing going. This podcast has been edited and produced by Evolution Trail Services. Thank you again for listening.